Hi, this is Zach, creator of Chronica, and you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Hey, everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
Sweet, there you go, you did great. Hey everybody, this is John. I have with me...
I can speak for myself, God. This is Vince.
You ruin it every time.
I know, that's my shtick.
And obviously we have Zach with us tonight, the creator of Chronica Age of Exploration, the current Kickstarter going on right now with about, I think, 10 days left, 9 days left?
Yeah, we're sitting right at 9.
All right, we're getting you in at the end of the wire here. We started a new... I gotta cut out all these us. It's terrible when I go back to edit. a new little bit here at the beginning of the podcast called Something Cool. So I'm gonna kick it right over to Vince and find out what cool thing he's got going on this week.
Okay. Well, this week I got my second installment of the Dwarven Forge sewer tiles, and these things are badass. Let's give a little preview of some of these cool tiles, which we will be using in a super secret project coming up soon, but you'll be able to share with it shortly. So there we go. That's my cool geek thing for this
cool.
week. Yeah, nothing major, but you know, it's there, but it's the small things.
Mm-hmm. Makes it all worthwhile. What about you, Zach? What cool things you have going on this week?
This week I am avoiding my responsibilities as sheriff at my local LARP game.
Ah, see, there you go.
Nice.
Kickstarter is like a second or a third wife, four wives.
Yeah, something like that. it's definitely a trial.
Mm-hmm. The cool thing I have going on this week is obviously this interview. It doesn't get much cooler than this.
Oh man, you're pandering.
Well, yeah, you know. Other than that,
man,
shit,
I should have said that. That's a good one.
It is, yeah.
I do what I can.
That's what he puts in, I think, when he doesn't know anything. When nothing happens that's cool and he doesn't look silly, he'll throw that in there.
Well, no, I'm playing Battletech this week. My brother was away last week, so we didn't get a game in. So we're going to finish that. I think we're going to finish that campaign up Friday night. I may actually Periscope a little bit of that. The game on Monday got canceled with the Dragon Fisters, so we've missed out on that. We're trying to get a new Star Frontiers game scheduled, so we're in the process of that. So, yeah, little odds and ends. I'm excited to play Battletech. I want to finish destroying my brother this week.
It's the small things.
Huh? Yeah, huh? Makes it all worthwhile.
That was actually something's cool.
Well, hey, I get to say whatever I want.
Fair enough.
All right, Zach. Well, so your new Kickstarter, your first Kickstarter, is Chronica Age of Exploration. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that project? What's it all about?
So it's a Pathfinder campaign setting, Pathfinder role-playing game compatible, and it's based off of a highly successful campaign that we had way back in the day. My friend came to me and said, Zach, elves with tricorn hats. I'm like, I love it. Let's run it. So we ran it. We ran it at our local shop, and it was highly successful. We kind of had this open door policy because we were at that time trying to build the tabletop RPG community in the area, and it got to like 16 players.
Wow.
And that is massive. That's way too many people. So we split the party into two. He GM'd one side, I GM'd the other side. It was separated into not good and evil, but more, what do you want to do? Which side of the war do you want to win? And it was highly successful. We loved it. A couple months later, he came to me and says, hey, Zach, you remember that game we ran? I'm like, yeah. He's like, let's make a book out of it. So we did. And that's kind of brought us to this point now. That guy's no longer on the project. You know, life happens and we kind of went in different directions, but we're still great friends. And it's become so much more than the game that we ran back at... it was called Cloak and Dagger Comics.
Cool. Very cool. And that's commendable. You guys are out there supporting your local store, trying to bring people into the hobby. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So the main point of the campaign setting is really to look at history through kind of a lens of magic and fantasy and all that, because history would be entirely different if, you know, you could live forever or talk to your god. So that's really what it's all about, and I'm really happy with what it's turned into.
And you've anticipated a bunch of my questions already, bastard.
Oh, no.
We're done.
Okay, we can all go home.
Yes.
So it's a kind of an alternate history. It's set 16th, 17th century. Like you said, you've got elves and tricorn hats. You also have, you know, real life, if you want to put it like that, civilizations and stuff. You have the English Empire. There's the French. Also, the Mongols are resurrected. You've got what I guess generally considered just the Olmec civilization. Are they from North to South America, or is that like a catch-all for kind of everybody in the New World currently?
A little bit of both. So the game kind of has like a European lens. When they landed on in the New World, they saw everything through their own eyes, and I kind of wanted to bring that here. So the Olmec is kind of a catch-all term for everyone who lives in the New World, but it is not everyone who lives in the New World. In addition to that, the people that they've been exposed to right away has been very limiting. It's just the people on the coast, because as opposed to what actually happened in history, a lot of these colonization attempts have been largely impeded by someone with just as much magic as they have. The only thing they don't have is guns.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, they really should.
Right. And firearms play, I don't want to say a significant, you know, portion of the setting, but it's a lot more common than, say, your normal Pathfinder game. I mean, this is like an established function of the world at this point.
Yeah, it's another flavor of the world. It's considered a martial weapon, so any fighter can pick up a flintlock and say, oh, I know how to use this.
Sweet. Pretty good. Are there any restrictions? I play Pathfinder. Nobody in the game is, you know, using firearms. Is it a slow weapon? How does it actually play out in game terms?
So they reload really slow. I mean, really slow. And if you're unlucky, the gun will explode in your hands.
Nice.
Those are the downsides. The upsides is that it goes right through armor. But you got to be really close for that. You got to be within the first increment. I've introduced a couple other little things. I really wanted to see hemp armor, because conquistadors back in the day, they wore underneath their breastplate a lot of padding, and they were really tough because it was a really hot environment that they were in, and they were just insulated every way till Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of something that I've introduced in this game is a type of armor that's very, very low cost that helps turn bullets, because it's become a very common weapon. And I feel like if it's common in the world, there should be a countermeasure that's just as common.
That's fair. I like that.
That makes sense.
Let's see. So you'd said that the game kind of started as a home game sort of campaign. Did you guys play on your own before you took it to the store? Like, did you develop it and play with a couple of friends first, or did you just like, hey, I got this idea, let's get it right out into the wild?
So the first game was this other guy, his name is Michael. He put this thing together, and the first game was Christopher Columbus feeding us to a green dragon because it promised him power, because he's crazy. When it got big, that's when we took a step back, and I said, well, I like to run games. I will run this game alongside you. And at that point, it became a very collaborative effort. It's like, this is where we want to go with it. This is what we want to do. And with players that you have a direct contact with, you can kind of tailor the game to their needs and their wants and what you think that they're going to expect. And we did that, and it was a collaborative effort in that way. What it's become now is completely different from that, but it has the same soul.
Okay. How much research did you have to do, you know, of the period, you know, 16th, 17th century? I mean, did you just spend months and months and months researching, you know, firearms and weapon types and cultures and all that sort of stuff?
So firearms are already in Pathfinder. I didn't have to do a whole lot about that. I did have to see who had what kind of things at the time. There was a lot of research done. I decided which civilizations I wanted to be in there. There's really nothing in there about how the Egyptian Empire interacted with the Atlantean nation because the Atlantis doesn't exist.
Right.
And some of these other cultures never existed alongside each other either. So I had to look through books and whatnot to see how much of what they did could relate with the other cultures that I wanted in the book.
Okay.
Cool. How long have you been working on the project? Is it something that encompasses a decent amount of time, or
the writing portion actually didn't take a whole lot of time, but I started this thing back in 2012.
Oh wow!
Yeah, a lot of the time was spent doing administrative things. My partner was supposed to be doing a lot of it, and just, you know, life happened, and it kind of fell on me, and I wasn't really ready for it. To be honest with you, I didn't have the connections. And over the past year or so, actually, is where I've shown the most, I feel. And I've kind of developed as a graphic designer just out of nowhere. And I've got connections with artists and writers and editors and everyone who I'd love to have on the project. But you got to eat, you know. So,
okay.
So that's one of the things they don't tell you is that, you know, these things cost money, and it's something that you should expect, but, you know, you don't really understand it until it's staring you right in the face. So,
oh, definitely. Yeah.
I guess to directly answer the question, a large amount of this time was spent doing administrative stuff.
Okay.
And I don't doubt that that's over.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I don't doubt that that's not over. There you go.
Yeah.
Continuing the process.
As a Pathfinder supplement, I'm assuming you take advantage of the open gaming license?
Absolutely, yes. I'm very careful with it.
Yeah, is that a complicated process to go through for someone who, you know, also maybe is like, oh, you know, we play a game at home and, you know, maybe we could do the same thing? Did you have to contact Paizo? What's the whole thing about?
So first off, before I say anything else, I just want to encourage everyone out there who thinks that you have a great game to do it, even if it's similar to what I'm doing, just do it. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it. And I'd really like to see more stuff from the community, even though there's already a world out there. It's what it's for. To directly answer the question, it was actually remarkably easy. I built myself up so much and thought it was going to be this huge deal. I'm like, I have to have a website with art, and I have to have a huge mission statement, this, that, and the other. So I finally got all those things together to have a decent looking product, or at least prototype. And I went to, what you do is you go to Paizo. They have a section for the OGL. You go to their compatibility license section and you fill out a form. And it's pretty much instantly approved.
Wow.
It is remarkably easy.
Very painless.
So, and that's why I say, you know, it's probably a lot bigger in your head than it actually is to get a compatibility license. There's a lot of things that go with that you can't alter the colors of the logo, and you can't imply that they endorse it or they make it, and some of that gets tricky. In fact, let me show you something real quick. These shirts I made, this color here, they accidentally made it like orange, mm-hmm. and the lettering is supposed to be kind of like an off black gray, and they gave it to me. It was like white gray and orange, and I'm sitting there like, you know, we already have like 20 of these made. What am I gonna do? I'm sorry, guys. I can't have it like this. My license prohibits me from changing it. So, it's one of those things where you just have to be careful because you're dealing with someone else's intellectual property, and they're loaning it to you. You're just borrowing it, and it's not really yours. But at the end of the day, the open game license is the bread and butter, and that's what you use to say, hey, +5 to strength, you know, because
yeah.
that's just that belongs to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. It seems like Wizards is kind of getting on board with that.
The DM's Guild.
The DM's Guild, where they're kind of encouraging people to put stuff up, where before they were just like, nope, we don't want any parts of that. You can't use it. It's ours.
Yeah, I think they learned their lesson with 4th edition. I've already had a couple of people ask me if I'm gonna port the game to 5th edition, and I looked into it. And apparently, there is a form of the open game license in 5th edition. So I'm looking forward to more content from the community from that.
Mm-hmm. Sweet, very cool. I had something on that too. Because No, it's okay. I'm just trying to find it. So it's Pathfinder specific. I mean, all your mechanics, rules, and everything are for Pathfinder. But people could port the system over, the setting over, and mm-hmm. use that in other game systems. I mean, D&D obviously being the easiest, as similar as they are thematically, I guess. Like, it wouldn't transport over very well to Vampire, I suppose.
No, especially not a high power game like that, because what vampire is going to catch sepsis from having a bullet stuck in them? I guess it just doesn't work. Like, so the setting is appropriate, I suppose. With one of those high power games, you could be like the ruling class of maybe the Gold Empire or one of these other nations. That would be really neat to see. A large portion of the book is actually fluff and not fluff, setting information. Mm-hmm. So, like, who does what and where and why. There's a lot of mechanics in there, but I feel like a good amount of it can just, you know, you can use for Shadowrun, just a really old Shadowrun game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would actually work really well with Shadowrun, too.
Right. And that is good, because you are working with an established system. You can devote more of your book space to, you know, all that setting information, all the fluff, all of the interconnections between empires and all those things, because, you know, people who are going to pick it up probably already have the Pathfinder core book, so you don't have to waste a lot of space, you know, sort of reprinting those rules.
Yeah, I'd like to one day design my own game, but for my first hurrah, I really feel like using something that's established is going to help with conveyance.
Okay, that's fair. Vince, you want to grab one?
Yeah, I'm curious. When the Kickstarter wraps up, do you have any plans on offering the book as a print on demand?
That's actually how I'm going to be doing it. So I went to a bunch of different printers, and this is another one of those administrative things. I learned that like short runs and long runs, they all require that you do a huge amount of prints, and a lot of times a publishing deal will require that you say buy back any books that they don't buy. So print on demand is huge. I'm going through DriveThruRPG. I'm going to go ahead and plug them here for a moment, because something that they do is, for the purpose of the Kickstarter, they give you everything at cost.
Oh,
so
nice.
So it just goes directly to the customer base, and then afterwards they just require that you stay on with them for a year, like exclusive for digital sales. So then they just take a portion of the sales, and it's a really good relationship, because then I don't have to sit on 1,000 books and then wonder if Barnes & Noble is going to sell back 100 to me, and where am I going to get that money? So, I mean, I'm just one guy, you know. I'm not White Wolf. I'm not Wizards of the Coast. I just really like playing tabletop RPGs, and I really hope that other people will too.
Well, it's huge. I mean, Kickstarter, I mean, you just go peruse the game section. I mean, there's always hundreds and hundreds of games being Kickstarted. So we're, you know, hitting a bit of a renaissance thanks to things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo now, for people to kind of get their products out there and, you know, for the rest of us to be able to enjoy that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. I played around with the idea of doing a board game using the Game Crafter. You can just pick whatever parts you want, and then you send them a PDF of your rule book, and it becomes a game. And they sell it in the box, just like print by demand via DriveThruRPG.
Oh, nice.
I'm writing that down for something.
Just write that down.
Learn something new.
I've been around.
Yeah, I have to pick your brain.
Yeah. So one of the things we were talking about, not having to include all the rules and all the other stuff, the Chronica really shines in regards to the setting material, because that's really what you're selling. Addition to the regional traits, you have regional feats. Do they do that in normal Pathfinder? I have the book. It's sitting on a shelf back here behind me, but I don't know it as well.
So not in the core they don't, but I believe there are regional traits. They're also called story traits, I think, but those are just traits, like a one-time level one thing. What I'm really doing is I wanted to define something that you can take, that everyone has access to, that kind of defines you by where you're from, and it's not a combat feat and it's not a general feat. So anything that qualifies for any of those, you know, you can't like kind of game it and be fighter and be like, oh, I have all these regional feats.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't seen a whole lot regionally. I think they did that in Eberron back in 3.5, someone said, and that's high praise if you ask me.
Cool. So to dovetail with that then, so if you play, you know, say a British elf, it's going to play flavor-wise, it's going to be different than, say, a French elf or, a Golden Empire elf or whatever.
Yeah. You're going to have a different outlook on society and life and the way things are going. You're going to have different goals depending on why, what you're running from or what you're doing for your country. And then mechanically speaking, you're going to kind of approach problems kind of differently, and you'll have more at your disposal that your country really shines in. The Atlanteans, for instance, they live, obviously, Atlantis. No one can find them. Just nobody knows how to get there. And that power has kind of been just soaked into the people that live there. And so they kind of have this anti-magic kind of theme going on. That'll come out when I do the prestige classes for them later on. For now, we've only got the 4 prestige classes. I didn't want to overload everybody with it. The prestige classes are meant to be hyper-focused, and I mean they have their place. They will be fish out of water at times, but I tried to make sure to include something in there to allow them to, you know, compete with the rest of the classes.
Cool. And you've got a couple of new races here. I'm bringing the PDF real quick. Go ahead. I'll let you do it.
We've got the Avitu, which are nomadic bird people, kind of anthropomorphic ostriches, if you will. They're flighted, unlike ostriches. They're mostly found in Africa. They're tough, they're hardy, and they are over-trusting. You got the Himatu, which are almost exclusively found in the New World, but given that there's exploration going on, you're going to see more of them in more of the eastern countries. They're wickedly competitive. They're also pinnacles of physical form. Then you've got the half rakshasha. I've taken to calling them half rock because all those syllables can just go to hell. And they're the only thing that can come from a rakshasha. They don't have a good home life, and they're kind of like the half elves, but kind of from a more evil perspective. They come mostly from Gold Empire. They're gonna have a strong relationship with the Avitu. The thing about all these new races that I'm bringing in is sometimes they overshadow the base races, which will be just about everywhere. You will find Avitu in the New World. They'll be born there like yesterday, but they'll be there. So these races, I feel like they kind of bring something to the world. I wanted the Avitu to express freedom. I wanted the Himatu to be about being something old. And I wanted the half Rakshasha to be something new, which the Gold Empire is pretty new.
And if we just go back, talk about the Himatu real quick, it's like a little velociraptor. He's awesome. I'm looking at the picture in the picture thing. They're really fantastic looking.
Yeah, I had fun with that one. I didn't do any of the art, but I worked closely with a very talented artist named Raylan Hoenefeld. And when I told her about that one, her first draft was just spot on. The sword is a wooden sword with obsidian blade on it. It's just everything that I want that race to be. Now, of course, the race can be anything they want to. You can even pull out a Himatu gunslinger. I think would be really cool with like the cowboy hat and all that.
Yeah, the duster and everything.
That would be pretty badass.
I see them as kind of a poncho wearing cowboy.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, they got the tail and all.
They're supposed to be related to the Avitu, but you know, separated by thousands of years of change.
Very cool. And I'm looking at the map here too, where, you know, the old historical maps, you know, used to be here be dragons, and you know, in this case they're actually are dragons and other monsters.
So when I went to my cartographer with that, I said, I want you to draw me the world, but adorably inaccurate. and just load it up with whatever whatever inconsistencies you want. So you've actually got Australia still directly connected by a huge piece of land to Asia. All these bits with the clouds are just completely unexplored. That's just their best guess.
Awesome. And magic does play a huge role in how, you know, all these different civilizations act, because, you know, it's not easy when you're, you know, say the British Empire, to roll into India and just take everything over when, you know, those people have magic, if not firearms and the other
right.
stuff.
So absolutely.
It really plays into the interaction between all the different civilizations.
And there's a huge Mongolian horde standing in the way, so there's that too.
Right, right up against the Russian Empire.
Yep, and the Turks.
Mm-hmm. You got something there, Vince?
Well, this is more of a statement than anything. I like your pricing tier. It's for the PDF copy, you've got $10, and then the soft cover is $25, and $35 gets you the hardcover. It's very reasonable. I like that.
Yeah, I tried to keep it pretty low, and all the goodies that I wanted to put in there, you really see them at the $50 tier.
Okay.
I didn't want to force those on people, so I also have an upgrade section. So if you don't want everything that comes in the $50 tier, you can just get the $25 and then slap on an extra $5 for an exclusive cover and things like that.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. Those options are nice.
All right. So you're sitting at 9 days. You're what's the percent? 92% funded here. You're only looking for a little over $400 to finish this thing out, so people should definitely go and check that out.
Yep, we're almost there.
Yep.
You want to throw out the website, your Twitter? Let's do that right here in the middle so people can go and check that out.
I'm at Chronica AOE, and the website is chronica-aoe.com.
There you go. So people should go check that out. Of course, we have all that information in the show notes. There's some neat add-ons too. You've got the Monster Pogs, sort of reminiscent of that Dungeon Masters set from 4th edition, and you can also upgrade the dice sets that have the little Chronica emblem on them, which mm-hmm. is pretty neat. And you could just I don't have the Kickstarter up. It's like $250 for a die or something like that, which is pretty reasonable for something exclusive.
Yeah.
I
wanted to do D20s, but they are exorbitantly expensive.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Bastards.
They would be cool though.
Yeah. Maybe next time. If I can bulk order them, then they start to be cheaper. But for this first project, I wanted to limit the risk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah, because you don't know who's going to want what, and you know how many people are going to do add-ons and stuff. It makes it kind of hard. So what other game systems are you into? Are you playing just Vampire? You have any other stuff going on?
Currently, we're playing Vampire. That's on a month-to-month basis. We meet once a month. I have a mage game that I've been neglecting. My friend runs a mage game that was inspired by the book Magicians. You might know the TV show that just came out, which suffers from TV sexy, which is kind of unfortunate. We just finished an arc in that, and it was a whole lot of fun. We're moving on to like a kind of a Stargate theme, but we haven't met up for that in a while. I also had another group. We were playing some Pathfinder. A buddy of mine, we were playing Scion. We all played the Children of Gods, and I was playing as Uncle Sam's progeny.
Hmm. Okay. That's pretty cool. Go ahead.
They added those in there. I just couldn't resist being the god of industry, I think it was called.
That's cool. Isn't that like Arathis in the... in WotC nomenclature, the civil goddess of civilization and all that?
Something like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you play any 4th edition at all, or no? You said alluded to playing 3.5.
I played a lot of 3.5. I played a lot of Pathfinder. I had a stint in 4th edition. I don't have a whole lot of love for it. I like that they tried to continue making content, but at some point it just became we were all wizards wearing different color hats. And so I don't have a whole lot of love for 4th edition. I'm really excited about 5th edition. I got to play a couple games in 5th edition. I played a fighter and I had fun. They made fighters unique. I played a defender. And it's nuts. You can just, like, someone attacks your buddy, nope.
Yeah.
I'm standing here. Nope.
Do you think that I didn't play 3 or 3.5, so I can't speak to that. But you know, fourth edition, you've got all your little power cards. So you're like, oh, if I do this, I can move, and you know, if I hit the guy, I get hit points back or whatever. Do you think that makes the game suffer as far as maybe taking away some player agency, insofar as like, you don't think as much out of the box if you have, you know, a little thing in front of you that says, I do this and I get this benefit?
Yeah, I feel like it became a little bit more of a board game or like a minis game. The best thing that 4th edition ever did, in my opinion, was Gamma World. Gamma World was amazing. I don't know if either of you guys got a chance to play this, but it was the same idea. You randomly generated your character, so you could be a robotic hawk person, or you could be a... It was nuts. There was 10 on this side, 10 on this side, and you just combined whatever it was, true to Gamma World fashion. And the powers changed as the game went on. And so I think in that way, like that's the game it was kind of supposed to be. But Dungeons and Dragons has always been about finding creative solutions to problems. You know, players see two doors. I'm sorry, I show players two doors and they see 10, you know. And yeah. In 4th edition, I don't think it took that option away, but I feel like it didn't encourage it, like some of these other large scale systems.
Did you want to comment, Vince? Sound like you were mumbling there, over there.
I would guess I was being rude and talking over, yeah. I apologize for that. No,
I'm sorry.
That's right. I was just saying that it kind of, like, I agree with you. It sort of diminished that role play aspect.
I think it depends on the group, though, too. Because, you know, we had some pretty stellar moments in fourth edition with people.
It's really what you make of it. But at its core, at its base, it seemed to be more on the tactical side than the creative role play kind of. Basically, it's a play as you go. You're building everything as you go along. Not that it really detracts, like you said, it depends on the group. But at its base, I think it didn't start off that way. So
I think that a first level 4th edition game is perfect for someone who has never played a tabletop RPG before.
Yeah,
because it tells you exactly what you can do. There's flavor in there. You're a wizard. You got magic missile. You got fighter. You have the hit thing ability. You know, it's absolutely perfect for teaching, you know, mechanics and how to use dice and all that. And then you can throw in the funny voices like, I am Bruno's Stone Crusher.
yeah.
I enjoy it. I mean, we played it forever. I'm so excited. My daughter asked me the other day, out of the blue, to show her how to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh my god! Yeah, the crowning. It's the crown of your life.
That's actually how I learned. I went to my dad.
So when we first started playing, she was 8 because it came out in 2008. And I said, hey, you know, do you want to play? Like, you play a cat or you can play a bear? You know, you can do. No, I'm not doing that. So, you know, we played for years and years. I'm like, hey, you want to, like, we're getting together? No, I'm not doing that. So she texts me. So, can you show me how to do this thing? Do I have to, like, make a character? What do I have to do? And I'm like, oh, my God, I'll get all the books when you get home from school. So I think she's got a couple of friends in school that want to play. So I said, let's do 4th, because I have all the books and, you know, the modules and everything. And so we'll get you in, we'll do that. Like, because it's easy for me to do it because I know the rules. So it's not as much work for me.
That's cool. Congratulations.
Yeah, that should have been my cool thing for the week.
I know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Awesome. And now you got 3.
Yeah.
At least 3.
I can't keep up with that.
Yeah.
I live under a rock.
Yeah.
Next time we have this, John, you're not allowed to say anything cool. You're done.
God damn it.
You're set for the next 3 podcasts.
Exactly.
But what if something else happens?
You gotta save. You're fucked. You're sorry.
All right. Well, whatever.
Nah, you.
And so, how long have you been playing? Like, have you been a gamer all your life, or was this something you came into, you know, like college age?
So when I was little, I started to look through my dad's books. I would sit there for hours just reading monster manuals and DM's guidance and things like that. Like, wow, this is all really cool. And I think I was like around 8 at that time. So I got my brother and my sister together, and we asked him to help us run a game. And he ran a game for us. And a little callback to that character earlier, my first character was a human fighter with a 1987 or 93 strength named Bruno Stonecrusher. And he died against us in his first battle against goblins. If you roll good, you roll good. Like that's and for that to be my first experience, I think kind of shaped me. It was a good experience, and that was the first and last campaign he ran for us. I think we did like 3 or 4 sessions. But that was enough to really start me off, and I got a group of friends together, and one summer we just played all summer, and we did a rotating DM thing, and it was wonderful. I had this huge reveal for my end of it. No, a lot of good memories of tabletop RPGs, starting with Second Edition or Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. And then more recently I've been huge into board games, and that's kind of impacted the direction of this, because I've developed kind of this idea of what fun is supposed to be. You know, don't borrow fun from someone else. You know, you do something that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorite board games that you're playing right now?
Kind of an unpopular opinion right now is Imperial Assault. And I know after the shit I gave 4th edition for being a minis game, but it's a really fun... Well, it doesn't present itself as anything else. It's an out-of-the-box miniatures game. You get your character card. It's like Descent.
Okay.
Have you played Descent?
I haven't, but I know of it, yeah.
So, yeah, you have a pre-built character, and you go through a scenario with it, and at the end of the scenario, depending on if you did well or you did poorly, you get a certain amount of resources, and you use those resources to level up and buy equipment and all that jazz. And it's a whole lot of fun. The huge difference between that and Dungeons and Dragons, and it's kind of a breath of fresh air for me, the Dungeon Master is not your friend. They are another player who wants to win.
Right.
You have to kind of trust them, because they have all of the scenario information in front of them, and if they misread anything, then it might be in their favor, and everybody hates me when I do that on accident.
accident, air quotes.
Yeah. Accident. The current campaign follows in the footsteps of the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, and it's a whole lot of fun because you get to keep your characters from game to game, and we're doing Risk Legacy, which also kind of does the same thing. Like you can nuke Australia, and it's gone forever. Nice. Like you scribble it out with a marker. I'm serious. This game has stickers and markers, and you destroy cards, pieces of the board, and it's going to be a freaking mess when we're done with it.
Sounds like a good time.
What about Tactile?
Yeah. Shit, I had a thought and it went away.
Oh my god.
That's what happens when you're old.
Apparently.
Shit, I can't remember. Oh well. It might come back, I don't know.
Tomorrow.
Happens all the time.
I'll get a phone call tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Way.
Can you comment on this?
Yeah.
We'll post it later.
You anticipated so many questions. I don't think I actually have anything else.
You answered everything like in the first 10 minutes.
Sorry. I've done this like 5 times this week.
You know.
Do you have anything that you want to talk about while we have you on? Anything you want to push?
Well, I have a question.
Yep.
All right, well, there you go.
You mentioned Shadowrun. Did you start out with the first edition?
No, I started with, what is that over there? Actually, don't know what edition I ran. It kind of left a bad taste for my mouth. About the size of a Pathfinder book, a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
Kind of a blue hue.
Yeah, okay.
4th edition?
Is that 4th?
I think that is, yeah. It's a monster book. You could use this as a doorstop.
Yeah, that's the one.
Maybe it's just a 4th edition thing. All these bad 4th edition games are playing.
I don't know about all of them. So something else in Chronica is and it's kind of something that I've had to face is it's since it's based on real world history, there's a lot of things in there that have to be in there, like real world religions and the concept of slavery, and it's something that I really struggled with. And at the end of the day, I really decided that to ignore those things would kind of be a disservice, and that it would be unacceptable to just pretend like it never happened and just have this fantasy world where all these European countries did great and nothing bad ever happened. So I've included that in there, slavery, a lot in the ancient Roman style where it was more like indentured servitude. But when you get to the New World and the slaves that are being taken there, then it's more kind of an evil thing that's going on. And then the religions, I tried to define the pagan ones as best I could, and then for the monotheistic and the shamanistic traditions that we might be more familiar with today, I very loosely defined those, because this goes back to a conversation that I had with a theologist friend, good friend of mine ages ago, that everyone kind of has their own personal relationship with their religion. Now, you could be Catholic and it be more of an institutionalized thing, but you still have your own idea of what your religion means to you. And so I kind of tried to bring that to the game by saying, if you are in a monotheistic or shamanistic tradition, you pick your domains and you pick your weapon, your favored weapon, and that's what your religion means to you. And I think that was the best way to do it without telling anyone, hey, you know, you're a Tigranist. I can't pronounce it very well. And this is what that means to you in this world.
That's fair. And that was one of the things I wanted to touch on when you brought it up. I remember now.
I'm sorry. I'll stop.
This interview pretty much.
No, it's good.
Itself.
So you not only do you have, you know, the religions of the elves and all these different things, but you also have a Christianity. There's Islam. There's Judaism. Yes. There's Buddhism. Tigranism. I mean, you have all these real world things that are, you know, now in juxtaposition with elves and, you know, the Raven Queen or whatever, which is a very interesting dynamic. I think that the setting itself would appeal to people who really enjoy real role playing and getting into the, you know, not minutia per se, but, you know, all those interactions between, you know, civilizations and different empires and you know, some of that diplomatic stuff. It seems like there can be a bigger emphasis on that style of play.
Yes, there's definitely room for the power gamers to say, oh, well, let's get a Turkish artillery commander on a British commander ship and just go to town on someone. But I was raised with absolutely every game experience that I've had to role play and not role play. And it's a huge part of how I play this game. And it might not be the way that everyone does it. You know, some people like to see big numbers on dice or dice results. And that's one way to do it. But I really wanted to focus on the way that I know role players want to play. And I get that from everywhere too, from my tabletop to my LARP, and sometimes even board games if I can fit it in there. But then I get weird looks.
Hey, that's all right. If you're into it, that's cool. That's the way to do it. You gotta bring them kicking and screaming with you. That's what I had to do with my fourth edition group. They're more of the hack and slash type player, so you know, I started giving, you know, inspirational bonuses in game for, you know, for good role play to try to foster, you know, bring people along. You know, I can get dressed up at the table and, you know, do all kinds of props and things to try to really engage people and get them to try to enjoy that aspect of the game as well.
Yeah, drink mead out of metal cups, spend a couple $100 on an armor piece, one like maybe the shoulder.
Yeah.
I haven't done that. I have a cloak.
You have a cloak?
Yeah.
We had a costume store just go out of business, and we ransacked the place. We picked up, nice. I want to say, three cloaks. My wife got like a dozen dresses. We were walking out the door, and they were still throwing stuff at us. It's like, here, take this too, because you've spent so much money here. And it really wasn't all that much. cool. and a lot of it translates over to pretty much anything we want to dress up for really nicely.
Cool. Well, and doing with the LARP that you're doing, yeah, that's definitely key.
Well, the LARP is modern, so and I play a dirty Nosferatu, so I come to LARP in a bathrobe that I've like run through coffee grounds and I tied it to the back of my car and drove around the block a couple times.
Nice.
Give it the weathered look.
Oh yeah.
The other thing that you reminded me of, you were talking earlier about, you know, vampires not getting sepsis. Is that a new mechanic that you've added specifically for your setting, or is that sort of thing already in Pathfinder?
I added sepsis. Like there might be an obscure source book somewhere, but I couldn't find it on any OGL source. I added sepsis and I added scurvy because during those times that was a huge way to die. You know, you'd line up two armies and they'd shoot at each other and they wouldn't die right away. They'd die, you know, a couple weeks later from, you know, their gut filling with, I'm not going to go into the details because I'll make myself sick. But yes, yeah. I added those things. I did a little bit of research into it. I've added mechanics for foreign objects being left in wounds, most prominently with firearms. I also gave it to any spell that has the profane keyword. So if I'm casting something just unbelievably wrong, it might cause you to get sick too.
Interesting. Is it a matter of just like a simple heal check? You know, like in a regular D&D game, like, oh, I get the lead shot out and you're A-okay in 10 minutes. Or is there, you know, is it more like a disease track, like in Pathfinder or 4th edition or something like that, where you have to make checks over a period of time to see whether or not you heal or not heal?
Warhammer's so like that,
too. Yeah, Warhammer?
Yeah.
So in Pathfinder, diseases and afflictions are more like a status ailment that's on you constantly. There's a cure and a save. If you cure it or you save it, it's gone, or you just resist it for that day. With sepsis, I added an additional mechanic that you cannot be cured of sepsis.
Clean that up in post.
See, this is why I didn't want to do the intro, because I stumble over my words. You cannot be cured of sepsis as long as there's a foreign object in you. So you have to have that taken out first. I introduced a surgery check that is based off of the heal check. You also have a new spell that does the same thing, but without any of the risks of harming the person that you're working on. There's a piece of art that I really want to have done for that. Just like a dude holding a bullet fragment over someone on a table. It'd be super cool, but we're not there yet. See, I added that, and then for scurvy, you can't be cured of scurvy unless you have fresh food available in addition to the save. So I really just engineered another ailment and then added an additional requirement for healing it.
Okay, and I guess all these things are optional, I guess, or at the DM's discretion, I suppose.
Yeah, anytime you add moving parts to a game, it can make it longer. I tried to streamline things as much as possible, because anyone can get an ailment in the game. Like, there are spells that do that. But for the fragments being left in you, the check is only done once at the end of the battle. For scurvy, you know, you either have it or you don't. It's just simple things like that, and that alongside with alternate language rules and including slavery in your game. If it doesn't fit to your group, like if you don't want to do the math or if you're not comfortable with the content, you know, it's your game. You do what you need to do for your game to succeed. I'm giving you all the tools that I have, and you know, if you want to pick them all up and run with it, great. If you only like the alternate language section, just use the alternate languages.
All right. I guess we start to wrap things up here. We have a thing we do at the end here called the Final Five. We have five geeky questions we'll ask you, and you can answer them just yes or no, or if you want to expound eloquently about those things, we can do that too. So
the answer to all of these might be Patrick Stewart.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because the first question is Star Trek or Star Wars.
Oh man, I'm batting 1,000 tonight, aren't I?
Have you already done this interview? I mean, what's going on?
I have a theory on that actually. But I'll get to that later. Star Trek or Star Wars? Star Wars. Simply because there's really only a very small fraction of Star Trek that I like, and that's Next Generation. Just love Next Generation probably more than I like Star Trek, but there's a lot more that makes up Star Trek. So going with Star Wars.
All right. Fair enough. Tabletop or video games?
Tabletop.
Awesome. Do you video games at all or no?
I do. I'm actually kind of guilty of playing League of Legends, but it's just because it's such a it's compartmentalized fun. The game lasts so long and then you're done. I've been playing This War of Mine. That changes, man.
I haven't heard of that one.
You have to survive, and to do that you need to eat and not get shot and bandage yourself when you do. You don't have any food, though, and other people have food. Nice people, like grandmothers and children. You can maybe find some in a pile of dirt somewhere, or you can definitely eat this week, and grandma doesn't eat this week.
Interesting. Sounds like a dark game.
Oh, it's super dark. It's super, super dark. It puts you right in the shoes of everyone's just bystanders, too. Do what?
Moral dilemmas.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, you can't win unless you do it.
All right. DC or Marvel?
I grew up with DC. I kind of don't like a lot of the DC heroes because they're not like they're all kind of hyper unrealistic. But I grew up with Flash, and on the other side of the coin, I grew up with Spider-Man, and I know that's Marvel, but gonna have to go with DC because I just love Batman outthinking anybody.
All right. That's really the big one that they've got going for them, too.
Yeah.
Marvel's definitely on point with their movies lately, though. I've got to hand it to them on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DC's doing all the television stuff, and, you know, Marvel's definitely got the movies locked down, for sure. Yeah,
they've got a formula, and it works.
For sure. Sci-fi or fantasy?
Why not both? Why can't it be both?
It could be both, yeah.
It could.
I'll take Firefly for 500.
There you go. We're good to see.
And if you had one superpower, what would it be?
Time travel.
Okay. You'd be the doctor?
Yeah. Something like that. Maybe I might go through this interview and then surprise you guys the second time around. I don't know.
Maybe that's how you knew all the answers to the damn question.
Yeah, you already have your superpower. Your interview questions are bad. It's out. Sorry. This is live.
All right. That's all we have. If you want to give all of your information again, so make sure that everybody gets that.
Yeah, shout yourself.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Chronica AOE. My website is chronica-aoe.com. There you can find my Kickstarter as well as my Pathfinder PDF that I've put together, a little preview. You guys can take a look at it. We're also updating at that this week to include some of the racial alternatives, including the Keeper of the Last Light, which is a half-rock racial alternative that has a bit of divinity in them.
Cool.
It shouldn't be there, but it had its way.
Gotcha. All right, cool. Well, we appreciate you coming on. And
I have one last final question. Actually,
Okay. All right.
Stand up a little bit so we can see your shirt. I'm curious about something. Okay, so the steampunk looking clock hands looks like it's at 4:15. Is there any significance to that?
Maybe.
Okay. Uh huh.
if I use the clock hands for anything, and I think, yeah, they're different. This logo and the book logo are different.
Okay.
So the times that they're pointing at is different. If I do anything with that, this is just putting this out there for anybody. If I do anything with that, it will use the books logo.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think there's a Kickstarter pledge level that's related to something you may be alluding to. All right, I'll start over again. Thank you for coming on. We're glad to be able to help you push your Kickstarter out a little bit. They're coming right up on the edge. Hopefully we can help to bump you up and push you over.
I appreciate it. I really hope that people see this and I want to get hyperfunded. I want to hit those stretch goals. I want to deliver on some of these really cool stretch goals that we have planned.
Cool. Like I said, it's a fantastic setting. It's certainly suited to people who, you know, really enjoy the role play aspect of tabletop. I mean, it's interesting. You've got a lot of new things going on, a couple of new races, and it absolutely looks like a lot of fun.
Thank you. I look forward to maybe coming down to Arizona and running a game with you guys one day.
Sweet. Cool. That'd be fantastic. Right. Well, you'd get me. You wouldn't get Vince. He's out in New Jersey.
Well, if you let me know, I can fly out there, you son of a bitch.
Oh, there you go.
Dragon Con one day? I don't know.
There you go.
There you go. Maybe. I was thinking about Gen Con this year, but I don't think it's going
to
happen.
That kind of
moves into our own plans for our own con. Beth, there you go.
No? You have something planned?
We have, sort of.
Okay. I'm not going to pull it out of you.
No, that's all right. Yeah. John can go into more detail if he wants to, but we do have plans for a Legend Con East, but that's a little further away down the line. So,
count me in.
We tried to rush it right in the very beginning. You know,
and we had to slow down. And we're biting off more than we can chew. Let's take it slow and build up the website and the podcast and all the interviews and everything, and then take it from there, build our fan base, and then ease into that. So, but that is in the works. Legend
still
time.
All on the table.
Yeah.
I like it.
Thank you.
Sweet. Well, you can find us at legendsoftabletop.com. If you have any questions, comments, feedback, you can reach us at legendsoftabletop@gmail.com. Of course, we're on all the social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I don't know, whatever's out there, Tumblr.
Smoke signals.
What's that?
To pigeon, we use the pigeons as well.
Yeah. Pigeon smoke signals.
Yeah.
Smoke signals, there you go. We're on iTunes.
Light off the flare.
Yep. Player FM, you can find us there. We're on the new Google Music Play. You can catch us there.
Oh, did that go through, by the way?
I believe so. I didn't get a follow-up email, but I think we're on there.
All right. When I added it, I forgot to go back and check.
Yeah, I'm waiting for them to like send me like a link or whatever, but I guess if you just search in the app, we should be there. Head out, you know, leave us a review on iTunes. We appreciate that. That would be fantastic if you could do it. And we appreciate you checking this out, and we'll catch you next time. This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.